Wait a minute. You're not Jaden.
I'm not.
Who are you? It's you know me. What? You know what? We'll figure it out when we start.
Oh.
I guess you just gotta kind of go for it then.
Oh.
Have you done this before?
I have not.
Okay. Just follow my lead, we'll go.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. What's going on, Titans? Welcome back to another episode of Daily Titan Podcast, or DT Pod for short. In today's episode, we're going to be breaking down Volume 118, Issue Number 4 of the Daily Titan Student Newspaper. My name is Kabir Kansar. I'm your layout editor, and today I'm joined with someone new.
Demiana Gabriel, Assistant News Editor.
Yeah, you really are Jaden, huh?
No.
Well, either way, we'll get on with the episode.
I guess so. For our top story of the week, Editor-in-Chief Jaden Lovelady covered recent updates in bargaining between the CSU system and the CSU unions. Did yes. you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Wow, this is really crazy. I'm on the opposite side of the table for once. This is really meta to be over here.
Like someone said.
Yeah, so I went to... There was a protest on Tuesday morning at the Chancellor's office down in Long Beach, and it was of the Union Coalition made up of... There was quite many of them, but standout ones would be, like, CSUEU, the CFA, mm-hmm. Teamsters Local 2010. Those are things we've covered before. Yeah, they're basically calling for, campus leadership to decide to take a 0% interest short-term loan offered by the state to kind of negate the impacts of recent budget cuts statewide. Yeah.
Yeah, and... In the article, it kind of talks about how part of their urging the CSU system to take the load is mm-hmm. to fulfill past agreements.
Yeah, so a lot of their agreements, of course, they're going to be specific, like, to specific unions. It's not, like, a collective thing over all of them in the union coalition. But specifically, like, they're banding together in the coalition to ask that they meet previous agreements, such as, like, cumulative wage raises of 10% or more, increased pay for lecturers, salary step increases, extended pay for parental leave, stuff like that, that they had agreed upon previously in the last bargaining cycle, and then they had to kind of walk back on that due to state funding being cut by 3%, which comes out to around, like, $143.8 million from CSU base funding. So a lot of their... like, agreements were written into the contracts as being contingent upon state funding. So because they don't have the state funding anymore, they're walking back on the previous agreements of meeting, like, you know, higher salaries and more step increases in those. But the state did offer this loan of $144 million, and it's...
With zero interest.
Zero interest, but it's short-term, so they'd have to pay it back.
Yeah.
So the Union Coalition is calling people, like, the... officials in the CSU to use that to meet previous agreements.
Have the officials in the CSU system given any indication on whether or not they are going to take the loan?
I think, as far as I know, at time of writing, it's still being, like, under... It's still being assessed by the Chancellor's office, as far as I know at time of writing.
And being out at the protest, what was the kind of sentiment you picked up on from the people that were there protesting?
It definitely... People are definitely very angry. I mean, they were promised things that would change their, you know, their way of life in some aspects. And some people, I know the people that I talked to spoke about how they're, like, their sole income for their families, and their lives depend on this, you know, and to have something that could change your life for the better be walked back on is really upsetting, obviously.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, it just, people were upset out there, and they were really, like, they were lobbying for their needs to be met through not only just the loan, too. The CSU has millions, like, for economic uncertainty in their funding. And I did talk to a few people who were kind of bringing up the fact that, like, it could be argued that this is economic uncertainty and that this would count to use, you know, some of their millions in base funding to... kind of offset this, but
yeah, to that point, if the CSU system, like, decides not to take this loan, mm-hmm. then have they given any indication as to how the needs for the agreement will be met? Like, will CSU foot the bill? Or
yeah, they haven't they haven't said anything specifically about it. I think that's why people are, you know, people in the union are so upset, because they haven't really, they've said that the loan is, like, under revision, and they're still weighing if they'll take it or not. But regardless of the loan, the people that I spoke to were just arguing that they have multiple ways to fix this. So they haven't given any indication of what that's going to be yet. Because it does say very plainly in the contracts on the CSUs, and it does say very plainly in the written contracts, like, yeah, it was contingent upon state funding. Mm-hmm. So as it stands, their agreements that they met in previous bargaining cycles, like last year and the year before, that is, like, that specifically was contingent on state funding. So now it's kind of, like, not damage control, but they're trying to find different avenues, but they haven't really declared which one that's going to be yet. So that's why the people that I talked to at the protests, they're mm-hmm. stepping in saying, like, well, we think it should be, you know, the loan, or we think you can pull from base funding. There are ways that you can meet our needs. Yeah. And it's a sentiment of distrust, for sure, between the faculty and the CSU system. Like, people feel like like I said, like, it's a certain, like, trust being broken. They promise them something and then walk back on it. And that's upsetting. And absolutely, even though it is from, you know, it comes from the state government level, it's not stuff that we can necessarily, like, control. It's still,
but it has, yeah, real life impact.
No, definitely. Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the points that really stuck out to me in the article, which you kind of touched on, was the quote from Ernesto Torres that ended the article, which was, if we don't come out here and demand what's right for us, no one will.
Yeah. He is the vice president of Teamsters Local 2010, and he's a project supervisor at Cal State San Bernardino. So yeah, he had me and him talked for a while about how, like, things are going on his end and stuff. And he also said earlier in the story, or I put it earlier in the story, that there's a lot of cutbacks in education, and that they kind of have a sense of, like, they feel that higher ups aren't taking priority in education like they should by not investing in their teachers like this.
It was really insightful to hear you talk about your experience at the protest. But I do want to ask, just having been back in the newsroom now for about 4 weeks.
Right.
How do we feel being back in the swing of things? Being back on the ground, really reporting on what's happening?
It's crazy. Honestly, like, I have obviously a different role. Mm-hmm. Like, it's obviously crazy for me to be on the other side of the table. Hashtag Miss DT Pod. Wow. Passing the torch. Wow.
I know. How do you feel?
I kind of feel like Unk. I kind of feel like Unk in the newsroom. Like, in a good way, in a very grateful way, but it's kind of crazy. Like, there's so many new faces in the newsroom, and we have a really big staff this semester, and I'm so grateful, like, so many people want to join and stuff like that. But I don't know, it's been really fun to, like, meet new people and, like, figure out what works for us, and, like, you know, finding my footing as a leader and stuff like that. It's kind of crazy, because, like, dang, I'm low-key Unk. Like, I'm low-key in charge. That's crazy, you know? But I love it, you know? I missed reporting, and, like, I was bored over summer, like, low-key.
Me too.
Like, this is my job, but, like, I write for the love of the game. Me too. I really do.
When there's no byline coming up or anything like that that needs to be covered, I'm like,
I know. I just on seeing, like, news headlines and being like, oh, if I was, yeah, I was back in DD.
That's what I'm saying.
I could have covered that.
That's what I'm saying. I, like, yeah, I don't know. I miss being opinion editor when I would write, like, creative write all the time. And I go, yes. Not that I don't love reporting. I do. But I love a good symbolism moment. I love a good soliloquy. So, hey.
Right.
Missing opinion.
No, that's really fair. Yeah. Right now,
how do you guys feel? Wow.
Oh, okay. So.
Oh, okay.
Personally, like, it's been said, like, I am personally really glad to be back. I'm news assistant editor again. And I don't know. I really do like writing news. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good way to personally keep me informed, and I genuinely enjoy informing other people about what's going on. Mm-hmm. It's really fun to write again. What is new, though, is being DT Pod co-host. I really am excited for this. It is something new.
Congrats on the first episode.
Ah!
This is very crazy. I'm passing the torch.
I, like, know. Oh, my God. No, this feels crazy for me, too. This, I don't know, but I am really excited.
Do you feel like a celebrity yet?
I hope that people start stopping me.
Oh, they do.
Oh my God, your voice sounds so familiar.
Yeah. Oh my God, are you on DT Pod? And then I have to sign autographs. I might start carrying around a Sharpie.
The life of being famous, I guess.
I know.
Shoot.
Personally?
Trials and tribulations.
I can't wait to get more famous. Oops. I can switch up on my day ones.
Yeah, me too.
I've been practicing.
I've been really practicing. Day twos, you're safe for now, but day ones, you better watch your freaking back.
Right, right.
I don't even know, man. I'm coming for the day threes and fours soon. Yeah, they're on my radar first.
Stay safe, day tens.
I'm practicing on the day threes.
When I open.
Yeah.
I'm practicing on my day threes, fours, and fives.
Yeah.
Before I just start going straight after the day ones.
Do you have different ways that you're going to switch up?
Of course.
Your day ones.
Different ways for different days.
And I always say that.
Right, that's a bar.
And I live by that.
Well, this has been great. I have got to get back to the newsroom, so I am going to leave now. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for
very
coming.
Meta.
Very meta.
Yeah, well, well, best of luck.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye.
All right, I think we're going to flip it on over to lifestyle, because I want to talk about myself this week and what I was up to.
What were you up to this week?
This week, I was at the Titan Dreamers Resource Center's Welcome Fair.
When was that?
That happened on Wednesday, and it was really cool. It was an event that's held pretty much annually by the Titan Dreamers Resource Center, or TDRC, and it's meant to kind of highlight different resources and different departments that they work with in order to like help students that are facing immigration issues or undocumented students. It's to help them kind of navigate through academia. And the fair was really cool because they tailor it to sort of like the current climate that students are faced with. So this semester, they had a lot of, like, different resources there to help students with, like, off-campus immigration issues and stuff like that.
Yeah. I was reading the article, and I heard that they actually moved it outside to the library in the quad this semester.
Yeah, yeah. So this is the first time that they've held it outside on campus. So this semester was held in the central quad, outside of the public library. Normally, it's held inside the public library, inside of the TDRC space, which is in PLS 180. But they wanted to move it outside in order to like help them gain a little bit more visibility, catch some attention to passersby, students on their way to class and things like that. Just that they're a little bit more informed about what's available to them on campus. A lot of these services are services that students kind of interact with in different ways. You know, like CAPS was there, Titan Hub was there. But to hear it kind of painted out in why they're relevant to the TDRC and their mission sort of put them into perspective. A lot of students were kind of concerned about their financial status on campus and the issues that they might be facing in terms of like tuition and things like that. So to hear someone from Titan Hub kind of speak on why it's important for undocumented or immigrant students to know what's available to them through Titan Hub sort of helps tie their mission in with TDRC and shows that a lot of these departments are really interconnected on campus. Like one of the quotes that I got from Jenny Chung, who's the director of the TDRC, was that they kind of wanted to minimize all the back and forth that they have to do with sending students to this department and that department in order to get the help they need. So to bring them all to one place, like in the quad, sort of let students know like, this is exactly who you should be going to for this, and this is exactly who you should be going to for that.
And I think that type of streamlining really helps students on campus, because between recent executive orders passed by this administration and even recently up until like last week, recent Supreme Court decisions that have been passed, people are left a little bit concerned about the political climate on campus. And I think another quote from that article that kind of highlights how pertinent these issues are to students on campus was from Carrison staff attorney Veronica Martinez, who kind of outlined that why these resource centers were kind of seeing more traction is because students on campus were feeling like uncertain or wary with recent goings on both in the government and locally. And I think that is also another part of the fair, is that it highlighted the legal services that are available to not only students but also recent alumni, recent graduates, faculty, admin too. Did you want to talk a little bit more about those?
No, absolutely. Yeah, like the quote that you're referring to from Veronica Martinez, yeah, she works for Caresen, which is a like they're a nonprofit legal service organization, and their main goal is to help provide free legal counseling for anyone that needs it. And they have a partnership with CSUF that helps like students and their families, faculty, alumni, and everyone kind of get that help that they need. And the quote that you're referring to was her talking about another thing that Caresen does in order to kind of help inform and also sort of calm the nerves of a lot of students facing these issues, is that they host a lot of workshops, especially like Know Your Rights workshops. With everything that's been happening in Southern California, a lot of these workshops have been a lot more crowded. Like she was telling me earlier on in the interview, that, you know, normally before the Trump administration came back, they were having like maybe 20, 30 people in their workshops. But since then, they've held like workshops that have hundreds of people in them. And that sort of has generated good traffic for them. But it's also a cause for concern because so many more people are now concerned about what's going on with them. And like, I don't think I could put it any better than she does. It's like the sense of urgency is very apparent now. So yeah, I think that resources like the ones that Caresen was providing and also other resources that the TDRC allocated, they set up a separate table just for external off-campus resources that students might need
And that included things like housing, housing placements, immigration services, and other things like that as well.
Yeah, I think that this is all, like, really important work. Did you have more information about just kind of the workshops that the school hosts? Like,
yeah, so the school does do a lot to try to help out students that are facing these circumstances, especially the TDRC. They host, like, different drop-in meetings that are actually done in conjunction with CAPS in order to let students, like, kind of air out their feelings and kind of get some comfort in terms of what they're facing and the issues they're facing. And they also host different programs and things like that. They let me in on a couple of their more statistic insights. And in the 24-25 academic year, last fall semester and this past spring semester, mm-hmm. They hosted over 40 workshops. They had upwards of 1,700 center visits just in the TDRC alone. And they had like 718 unique program attendees. So to kind of hear how these numbers are portrayed, it helps put into perspective just how many of our students are affected by these issues and why events like the TDRC Welcome Fair are so important to us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay then.
Okay then.
Shall we move on?
We shall.
All right then.
All right.
Hey Titans, this is Sergio Gonzalez, the Digital Managing Editor of The Daily Titan. Stay connected and follow us at The Daily Titan on social media. Be sure to pick up a paper on campus in the orange newsstands, and if you want more stories, check us out online. See you next week.
And painting a broader picture of campus resources and events, this week we have an opinion article written by our very own opinion editor, Giselle Medina, which talks about AI in the art department on our very campus.
Yeah, I thought this was a really interesting article because it kind of, similar to the way TDRC kind of brought things together and showed how different departments intersect,
mm-hmm.
I think this article sort of did that in a similar fashion, just in relation to the arts and the way students kind of interact with art and the content the campus produces. And I think this article, while it kind of centers on the use of AI within the art department, I think it really speaks to a level of career readiness that the school is still, I think, trying to figure out and how to navigate when it comes to using AI in classrooms and learning through AI. But the article was kind of spurred on by the use of AI on different team social media accounts from like the Titan Stampede account, the Fullerton Titans account, and the Fullerton Women's Tennis Instagram accounts using AI in some of their posts, which kind of left students upset because they felt like a lot of the AI art that was being generated in these posts could have been produced by a student for some kind of volunteer opportunity or something like that.
Right, and I feel like the debate that was sparked because of these posts kind of touches on a general concern that art students are facing with career readiness, and that there is this almost insecurity that AI kind of threatens their jobs, specifically generative AI.
No, and I think you bring up a good point in mentioning the discourse that students kind of have regarding this AI in art, and especially with the art department as well, because I think in our day-to-day lives, the most sort of interactions we see with AI on a personal level is through art, whether it's like AI-generated images on Instagram or AI-generated videos that you see on TikTok and things like that.
Yeah.
A lot of this art and content is things that people would happily produce, whether it's for the school or for their own personal gain. And I think the concerns that these art students have when it comes to AI are especially valid because in our day-to-day lives, it seems like AI has mostly permeated into art as its sort of first foothold in the way we interact with our content.
Absolutely.
So I think that their concern and their sort of fears about AI and its potential to replace them in this industry are valid. But I also do think that this article brings up a very good point in that we can't just ignore AI because it would leave our students sort of underdeveloped in the way they can navigate their careers. Ultimately, AI is meant to function as a tool.
Yeah.
But it's upon our instructors and our curriculum in order to inform us as to how it can be used as a tool instead of as some kind of creative content machine.
Absolutely. I agree with the point that this article brings up, that to kind of just deny the rising importance of AI, especially in industries of art, is to leave students unprepared for what they're going to realistically face within the job field. And I do think that there is a way to keep that balance within maintaining AI as a tool and still creating a space that artists can flourish creatively.
Definitely. And I think that's a sentiment that's also been sort of echoed throughout the art department. Faculty member Hunter Huang, who gave an interview for this story to Giselle Medina, he gave a really good quote kind of explaining his reasoning for introducing AI into his course content. And part of it was because he wanted to future-proof them for their careers and let them know about what sort of changes the industry is facing as AI grows.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that a lot of that insecurity is maybe beginning to settle, or it most definitely will settle is one of the points that is brought up in this article. One of the fourth year students who gave an interview for this article, Jack Campbell, kind of touched on the sentiment. He discussed that while AI is used for art generating, that is the entirety of what art is, that's generating art. And he kind of made the assertion that the art that humans make is beautiful, and there's something just specifically human about the art that is man-made that AI can't really capture.
Definitely. I think that there is sort of this intangible sort of like soulfulness to art created by humans because it's made with their vision in mind, whereas with AI you're kind of just feeding it what
it's
you think.
It's just regenerative, and I do think that there is kind of a concern that this is just in the beginning of stages of AI, that AI might develop and maybe one day kind of make fields like art obsolete, but I don't think that that's a reasonable concern. I think that the expression of art is very intrinsically human. It just kind of touches on the emotions that we all face, and that's very deep, and no matter how complex or amazing technology gets, that's human emotion is not something that's going
to
go away.
Definitely. I think that kind of speaks to like the indomitable human spirit. And I think one of the cooler details that kind of really stuck out to me of this article was the last graph, which just says that Anna Maria Willen, who is an assistant illustrator for the Daily Titan, contributed to the story.
Yeah.
And I find that really interesting because I'm curious to see what contributions she made as someone that works in illustration and someone that does produce content on a pretty consistent basis, similar to what people are trying to use AI to do. So I'm very curious to see like what her thoughts and contributions to this article were. So I'd love to talk to you about that.
Yeah, I think it'd be a really interesting perspective. And I think it kind of touches on what we discussed earlier on about the use of AI generated images on school Instagram accounts. And that there's always an artist that wants to do it, especially we're in college. We're all trying to build up our portfolios in order to enter our respective career fields once we graduate.
Absolutely.
So it doesn't even have to be for money. I don't think it's a question of budget. It's
opportunity. I think a lot of people do this for opportunity.
Especially with art. I think art is special in that people love to be creative. It just allows people kind of agency and creation. I think that, again, while AI is a very new tool and things like using AI to generate fun images of what our athletes look like or anything like along those lines, it just seems very fun and easy, but hey, there's an artist who will do that for you that is human.
Yeah.
I have a question for you. JK.
Okay, then I guess we'll cut it here then. All right, I think it's about time we just dive into the deep end. I think we got to talk about water polo.
I can't wait personally but
you know we can't talk about water polo unless we have our certified sports correspondent. Our current digital managing editor, Sergio Gonzalez, is in the building here to talk about men's water polo with us. Sergio, how you doing?
I'm good. It's glad to be back.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Long time coming.
A little bit.
So what can you tell us about men's water polo this weekend?
First off, I liked your pun earlier with the deep end.
I'll try my best. You
know. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Anywho, they had a bit of a back and forth weekend. They started off with the win, lost their next two, but bounced back with the win at very end, which was Coach Kyle Witt's 300th career win.
So, wow. Congrats to Coach Kyle Witt.
Yeah, we love to see it. He's an awesome guy. So, brought our program back a little bit, so it's good to see.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah. What were the details on some of these wins and losses? How'd they look?
It was a little bit rocky, so they got off to a good start. They won 22-8 against Occidental to start.
That sounds dominant.
Yeah, and then they played a ranked team in number 18, Brown, and they lost 8-12. Which, low-key, though, like, ranked teams, not easy to play. But they made it kind of competitive, and, like, I think, yeah, they were down one only at the half, so, like, not too bad, but they lost to Harvard only by one. So, like, 2-2, yes, like, the record is, like, 500, but, like, there's a lot of positives from the weekend. And ultimately, like, the guys got to be proud of their team, for sure.
No, definitely, yeah. I was reading the article, which was written by a Com471 reporter, Isaac VC Chavez, right?
Yes.
Yeah, his article, the wins were described in pretty solid detail, hearing about, like, the loss to, the Harvard team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was a pretty back-and-forth game.
Yeah, it was. They were only down 5-4 at the half. And, I mean, Harvard's given them trouble in the past, from I'm pretty sure. But even then, like, they were just coming off of that loss against ranked Brown, so they probably felt good going in. Obviously an unfortunate outcome, but at the end of the day, they did win later on in the day against Viola. So.
No, definitely.
Yeah.
With these two losses and two wins coming over the weekend, what does their overall record look like right now?
Right now, they're 5-7. I will say it can be a little bit misleading in the sense that, like, they play some pretty tough schools. Like, they started off against number 7, UC Irvine, and number 13, Cal Baptist. A good chunk of these California teams are ranked and pretty damn solid. So, definitely, like, kind of was on the rocker to start the year, but they're finding their footing a little bit, and things are looking positive, and they have a few more tournaments coming up before they get back into conference play, so.
What do you think their outlook is going to be as they come into conference play?
That is probably going to be the turn over the next couple of weeks, because it's a little hard to negate that now, but they always have some trouble. I mean, it's been 2 years since the program was revitalized, and they haven't won a single conference game. They came close once, did not happen. Every single team in the conference is ranked, and we are the only team that is not. So it's always kind of difficult, but never say never.
Never say never.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think that around wraps it up. Thank you again for coming on here tonight and talking to us about water polo.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me once again. Shout out to Kyle Witt.
Shout out, Mr. 300.
That's a guy. Yep.
Yeah, hopefully we'll be hearing again from you soon.
Yep, hopefully.
Never say never.
Oh.
Never say never.
All right, then. We'll see you.
Later.
Later.
And that's it for this week's episode of GT Pod. Kabir, how do you think I did?
On a scale of 1 to 10, like a 10.
Oh, okay. Be sure to pick up a copy of The Daily Titan on campus or check us out at dailytitan.com to read the articles mentioned. Thank you all for listening to our episode tonight, and for the first time ever from me, if you like us, we love you.
All right, y'all. Before we fully dip out, you know we gotta get thankful for just one moment, as per usual. First of all, I want to give a special thank you to our executive producers, Sergio Gonzalez and Jaden Lovelady. I also want to give a thank you to our producer, Michelle King. And another thank you is going out to our assistant producers, Giselle Medina and Reynolds Santos. Our music is provided by Bijanshu Sarise, who deserves a thank you all on his own. And we want to thank all of you for listening and keeping in touch with us through our broadsheets and through our website. So stay tuned and keep looking out for the Daily Titan. We'll see you guys next week.